Was ist gut? Ein Podcast des Deutschen Design Clubs.
Being a UNESCO City of Design, it certainly sounds exciting. But what does it actually mean? Welcome to a new episode of DDCast, the podcast of the German Design Club. In this edition, we explore what it means to be a UNESCO City of Design and take a closer look at Berlin's 20-year journey within this global creative network. UNESCO stands for the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. The UNESCO's Creative Cities Network was launched in 2004 and brings together more than 400 cities in over 100 countries. The idea is simple: to connect cities that see creativity and culture as key drivers of urban development and as essential ingredients for a sustainable future. Within that network, each city is recognized in one of 8 creative fields: architecture, crafts and folk art, design, film, gastronomy, literature, media arts, music. For its members, the network is much more than an honorary title. It creates opportunities to exchange ideas, develop international partnerships, and learn from one another. It also helps cities strengthen their creative industries and showcase them to the world. This year, Berlin celebrates 20 years as a UNESCO City of Design. As the first German city to receive the designation, Berlin was recognized for its vibrant design culture and its contribution to innovation, creativity, and urban development. Shaped by a unique history and a remarkable diversity of people and ideas, the city has become an international center for design. Over the past 2 decades, Berlin has continued to invest in its creative ecosystem through funding programs, advisory services, design hubs, and international collaborations, recognizing design as both a cultural strength and an economic asset. Earlier this June, around 50 representatives from UNESCO Cities of Design met in Berlin and Frankfurt for their annual network meeting to exchange ideas on design, innovation, and the future of cities. We were there to meet some of the delegates and ask them what being part of the network means to them. We also wanted to hear their impressions of Berlin and their hopes for the future of the UNESCO Cities of Design program. Our first guest is Dawn Lim, Executive Director of the Design Singapore Council. We began by asking her how Singapore came to see design as a strategic asset for the country's development, and how UNESCO City of Design status has contributed to that vision.
And one of the things that we always say in Design Singapore is that you design because you believe that there can be a better future. Otherwise, why would you design, right? So you're always trying to improve something. And that's also the mindset that we have for the country, where we're always trying to redesign, improve, innovate, such that Singapore is always at the forefront and we're always relevant and competitive, you know, to the global market, but also to the global community. And in UNESCO, it's given us a new family, a new network of friends who understand what it means to have design as your DNA, but also the challenges of being able to bring the rest of their city along this journey of understanding the value of design and what it can do for the community and the society. Yeah.
Emma Bugden works for the municipality of Whanganui in New Zealand. This small city is located in the North Island, just about 2 hours north driving from Wellington, which is at the bottom of the North Island. At first glance, Whanganui seems worlds apart from Singapore. It's a much smaller city, yet in 2022, it also became a UNESCO City of Design. So what was it that earned Whanganui this recognition?
My city is a really small city. It's 50,000 people. But we have a really long reputation as a creative hub. We have a really strong manufacturing sector with a lot of global manufacturers. We have a really significant art and craft sector, so a lot of international artists who have made their home in Whanganui. And we have a really deep focus on indigenous design, so we're a country with a history of colonization and really lifting up and celebrating our Indigenous design history and our Indigenous designers is really important to us. And for us to be able to connect into a network of cities around the world, most of whom are bigger than us, to be part of a conversation that we can learn from, listen to, and also contribute to is incredibly powerful for us. It gives us a chance to reach outside of our own knowledge and our own connections and to really speak and be part of a global conversation.
Emma Bugden highlights the value of belonging to a global network, a community where cities can learn from one another and contribute their own perspectives. Turning those international connections into real collaboration is vital. Stain Debali, Managing Director of Design Regio Kortrijk, a UNESCO City of Design region in Belgium, close to the French border, shares how cities of very different sizes exchange ideas, tackle common challenges, and learn from one another.
The advantage of being a UNESCO Creative City of Design is that you can talk to similar organizations in other cities worldwide. And then you see that actually it doesn't matter of the size of the city, but we all have similar challenges. We're really exchanging best practices and we learn from each other. For example, we have a challenging retail industry or a sector in our city. A lot of shops are closed or empty spaces, or a lot of existing shops are struggling to survive. We found expertise in Detroit and Montreal on how to support retailers to work with designers to increase the experience in the shop. So these are really relevant programs, and it's not only about aesthetics. It's really the goal is to create more revenue and more profit for these companies by design, and that is super valuable.
We've learned that the UNESCO network connects cities across the globe, but every city brings its own way of making design work. In Kortrijk, a compact Belgian region, close connections between people and institutions have created a culture where collaboration happens quickly, and often just a phone call or even a WhatsApp message away.
So the model in Kortrijk is that since we're compact, everybody knows each other. And that's when it becomes interesting, because there's a very easy collaboration between the city, the regional institution, the design school, the Chamber of Commerce, the fair organizer. Now we also have an environmental company involved. Since there's very short contact lines, we can easily set up initiatives, new projects. We can easily talk to each other. Like I could WhatsApp like the mayor, which I obviously don't do every day, but if it would be necessary, it's really possible to call her. How cool is that?
It definitely sounds like a designer's dream. When communication is direct, collaboration becomes easy. For design to create lasting impact, it also has to become part of the institutions that shape a city. Patrick Marmon, lead design commissioner for the City of Montreal, Canada, explains how embedding design in city government transformed it from a tool for promoting creative talent into a way of improving public services, urban spaces, and everyday life.
So the City of Montreal created the design commissioner position in 1991. So it's been a bit more than 30 years that we have the position. And for the first 15 years, it was mostly about promoting designers who were doing exhibition, awards, program, and focusing on the promotion of designers. And what happened when we got the UNESCO designation in 2006, so as Berlin, it's been 20 years that we have the designation, and we saw a real shift in what we were doing. And we often say that we passed from a city of designer to a city of design, a city that were not just promoting the designer, but was trying to use design in its processes to improve the physical environment, to improve the services it was doing, or the life of the citizen. So the UNESCO designation helped us to create that shift from the city of designer to the city of design.
Asahikawa is located in the middle of the Hokkaido Island at the very north of Japan. The city has strong roots in furniture manufacturing and woodworking, supported by the rich forest resources of the surrounding region. When cities embrace design as part of public policy, we need to ask what kind of change should it create? For Rachel Ho, who coordinates international relations for the city of Asahikawa's Industry Promotion Division, the answer goes far beyond aesthetics. She sees design as a way of connecting people with each other, with nature, and with their community.
But for us, we view design as many other cities do these days, which is that it's not just a way to improve appearance. It's regarded for us as a method for connecting people with one another and connecting people with nature, as well as connecting people with their communities to create a better future. So we use our designation to, first of all, help our citizens better understand this broader definition of design, to get them to understand it's more than just what you can see, more than what's tangible. And by doing so, we help to build civic pride because we're a very small city, you know, and the youth, if you don't get them to see, get them to realize what's so great about their city, it's not sustainable.
From Montreal to Asahikawa, we've heard how design can become a tool for better governance, stronger communities, and a shared sense of purpose. Diana Soldany from Daugavpils, Latvia, brings these ideas together, explaining how the UNESCO designation has changed the way people understand design and why that shift in perception creates new opportunities for collaboration.
The best thing what it has brought to us is that change of perception. It's easier for us to explain to our colleagues, to other stakeholders, how design and design thinking can be perceived other ways, not just as previously. And also, of course, it gives us visibility and opens more cooperation ways and resources. And already in this event, we really have discussed various ideas and possible ways of cooperation. And that's very important.
A commitment to creativity as a driver of sustainable, people-centered urban development can become a powerful force for change. Its impact is often most visible in cities facing profound economic and social transformation. Where traditional industries have declined, employment opportunities have shrunk, and many people have left in search of a better future. Detroit is perhaps one of the best known examples. Once one of the world's great industrial cities, Detroit experienced decades of economic decline and a dramatic loss of population. Kiana Wenzel is co-executive director of Design Corps Detroit, a nonprofit economic development organization based at the College for Creative Studies in Detroit, Michigan. We asked her to describe Detroit's remarkable transformation and the role that design has played in the city's revival.
Detroit experienced lots of population loss. In the 60s, we went from a city of over 1 million to a city of around 600,000 people. So we were losing population for like 30 years straight. And now for the first time ever, Detroit has grown its population for the past 3 years. Yes. And so that takes a lot of time, but it's part of our organization is connecting those creative businesses to opportunities, whether that's a business opportunity, a speaking opportunity, an opportunity to showcase their work, and then helping to change the narrative of the city. You know, we used to be Detroit murder capital. Detroit, was it a riot? Was it a rebellion? We were known for all this negative past. But now Detroit's narrative is Detroit, the comeback city. Mm-hmm. Detroit's renaissance. Detroit's experience in this reinvestment. Mm-hmm. And then I can see that also with Berlin.
It's a truly remarkable story, showing how design and creativity can help a city reinvent itself. Later in this episode, we'll return to the interesting parallels between Detroit and Berlin. But first, we asked Kiana how Detroit has benefited from being part of UNESCO's Creative Cities Network.
You know, I like to say local impact, global influence. Mm-hmm. You want your city to be part of the global design conversation. And so how do you do that? And being a part of the UNESCO Creative Cities Network helps us position Detroit in that global conversation. Mm-hmm. Our goal at Design Corps is to have our city be globally recognized, valued and respected. And that being a part of the network is like a global endorsement for the talent. As well, we don't want to just talk about the past. We want to talk about contemporary times, designers working today, coming up with solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. And this was really important for Detroit because as we were shifting the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
If Detroit illustrates how design can help a city reinvent itself, Singapore offers a different perspective altogether. Since becoming an independent city-state in 1965, the country has relied on long-term planning to support its rapid development. In that context, design is not simply about products or places. It has become part of the way the nation organizes itself. Dawn Lim describes why Singapore sees itself as a nation by design.
So in Singapore, we like to say that we are a nation by design because compared to many of the UNESCO cities of design, we're very young. As a nation and as a city, we're only 60 years old. So everything about Singapore was actually deliberately thought of and someone designed it. When you come to Singapore, you'll see a lot of examples of systems design, how things work, but how different systems come together, not just for functionality, but also for experience, especially for citizen experience and visitor experience. And systems design was one of the ways that we looked at how to organize the country and the city to be able to give us that structural leg up and to be able to provide that welcome, that feeling of confidence mm-hmm. to the international community that things work here. You can be confident in what you do in Singapore and you've designed it this way. Such that you can get what you need from this country.
The challenges facing cities are shaped by their history. Few places illustrate that more clearly than the Baltic states. Since regaining their independence after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania have undergone a remarkable political, economic, and social transformation. Today, cities across the Baltic states are increasingly exploring how design can become part of long-term public policy. Diana Soldani from Daugavpils, Latvia's second-largest city, explains why her city is working to move design from the cultural sector into the heart of urban planning.
In our city, it's so that the design and design thinking is perceived at the moment mostly as part of cultural sector, like design education, design events, and it's very narrow scope like of perception. But what we want to change and why we are here, why we are also UNESCO Creative City, that we want to bring design as a like part of city development planning, and so that it is like a non-negotiable part that you have to take this into account all the time. And thus, this perception to understanding that design is a huge role, has a huge role in city development planning, and that design has, it's very important. If you do it without thinking about it, then results may be good, but will they be sustainable?
Many UNESCO cities of design are rethinking how decisions are made and whose perspectives shape the future of a city. Earlier in this podcast, we heard Emma Bugden from the municipality of Whanganui in New Zealand describe her city's strong commitment to indigenous design principles. One example shows how that commitment has reshaped not only environmental policy, but the way the city is governed.
So we have a river runs through our city, the Whanganui River, and we have a saying, from the mountains to the sea. And one other thing, actually, if I have time, just to say that is special about our city is that our river has legal personhood. So it has legislation that means that it has to be considered a legal person, and all decisions around its management and development have to be made in co-design with our Indigenous community. And that's a really significant part of our design story.
The Whanganui River was granted legal personhood in 2017. Legal personhood means recognizing the river as a living entity with its own rights and interests, represented by appointed guardians. The decision has attracted international attention as an innovative model for integrating indigenous values into environmental governance.
That's so interesting because the legal personhood, that was the result of a 100-year battle by indigenous people to regain control over the river to kind of repair a lot of the damage that had been done to it. And it's interesting because that legal personhood gets a lot of international attention. We have a lot of researchers come to Whanganui to understand about it. But essentially that legal framework is just a lever, I guess, to fight back, to say we need to look after this river in a different way. We need to repair it. We can't continue to operate in the way that we have. Yeah, well, for us, it was a big part of going for that design designation because I work for the municipality. We have worked in a very Western way for the whole of our existence, you know, and that has kind of ignored and not acknowledged Indigenous principles and Indigenous ways of working. And this legal personhood means that every part of the municipality has to work in a different way, which is a partnership model.
Design ist längst mehr als reine Ästhetik. Es ist die transformative Kraft für unsere Zukunft. Die Designkonferenz Form Future bringt DesignerInnen, Führungskräfte und VordenkerInnen zusammen. Erlebe ehrliche Keynotes, inspirierende Cases und packende Panels. Bring deine Fragen ein, tausch dich aus und gestalte den Wandel mit. Am 10. September im Flughafen Tempelhof Berlin. Tickets jetzt auf formfuture.berlin.
When Berlin was named a UNESCO City of Design in 2006, the designation came with a clear ambition. The city saw design not only as a cultural asset, but as a driver of innovation, economic development, and urban transformation. Over the past 20 years, Berlin has built a wide ecosystem around design, connecting creative communities, businesses, research institutions, and public organizations. The goal was to create an environment where creative ideas could flourish and where design could contribute to solving real-world challenges. 20 years on, the question is how this ambition is perceived by colleagues from other UNESCO cities of design. During their visit to Berlin, they experienced the city's creative ecosystem firsthand. Rachel Ho from Asahikawa, Japan, shares her first impressions.
So from what I saw of Berlin over the past couple of days, because this is my first time here, the feeling that I get is that it's extremely vibrant and engaged, especially and including the youth. So I remember that for the 20th City of Design anniversary celebration that we went to, there were lots of booths set out for us, you know, and it really was an amazing array from physical and industrial design to technology and systems. And I saw how there were designers out there using technology, for example, sensors to measure air pollution in very specific areas of the city and using that to improve the lives of the people who live in those neighborhoods. And I saw one of the booths was about the Industrial Design Hub Berlin, where a very young woman, she was extremely passionate and driven. And what she does is gather people who are in the industry to talk and to communicate, to connect and to collaborate. So I found that was amazing. And we also saw some design for democracy and social impact. So again, young and passionate people, I feel like Berlin has a lot to offer as a city of design. And so what really impressed me was the passion and the drive and the energy that they had for what they were doing, because that is what will fuel and lead the next generation.
Rachel Ho was impressed by Berlin's creative energy and the wide range of design initiatives she encountered during her visit. Emma Bugden has known the city for much longer. Having returned to Berlin over nearly three decades, she reflects on what makes its creative culture so distinctive.
I think Berlin is the epitome of a design city. I first came to Berlin, I think, 27 years ago, and every time I come, I'm just struck by how palpable creativity is. It's not just happening in the kind of big formal institutions, it kind of breeds in every alleyway, in every public space. You know, everywhere you walk, you think, I am walking in a creative city. Okay, this is a story that is very much from the perspective of a New Zealander, and I'm going to say that New Zealanders are very shy and quiet. And one thing that really struck me is that we went to the event for the 20 years of the Berlin UNESCO City of Design designation. There were many, many local designers there, and all of us out-of-town visitors from the other cities of design. And if that wasn't a New Zealand event, I think the local designers would have just stood there and talked to each other. I had so many conversations with so many Berlin designers who came up and engaged with me and welcomed me into the city. And that felt incredible. You know, it really felt like I made so many connections with design strangers, which was a truly wonderful thing.
For Don Lim, one of the city's defining qualities is the way its creative community organizes itself. Supported by individuals who share spaces, connect people, and create opportunities from within the scene itself.
Berlin is so incredibly vibrant and energetic, and I love that so much of the creative energy is organic, self-organized among the creative community, and they take care of each other. I also love that you have the private sector, private individuals who have come forward to say, hey, I have a space, I give this space for you to use. And through that organic organization, I think is so much more effective because on the ground, they know what they need and what they want, and they support each other.
Diana Soldani from Daugavpils, Latvia, comes from a city that is itself undergoing profound transformation. What stands out to her is not only Berlin's scale, but its ability to adapt, to renew itself, and to remain open to new ideas and dialogue.
It's a very busy city. It's a multicultural city, and people come with different perceptions and ideas and how they want to live. And we see that Berlin is a very good example how a city adapts to people living, how it takes into account their needs, how it's constantly changing and thinking about being functional. We have seen that we have been in Berlin previously, and we see how it's changing. For example, how houses and buildings are renovated, how they are remade, how they are becoming more functional or more sustainable. And that's what is the best thing, that it's constantly developing.
Patrick Marmon from Montreal sees Berlin's strength in the relationship between civic initiative and institutional support. Many of the projects he encounters are driven by people and communities themselves, while organizations such as the City Lay B provide the framework to develop and implement new ideas. In his view, that combination gives Berlin's identity as a UNESCO City of Design a tangible presence in everyday urban development.
You know, from what we've seen so far in a very short trip, it was a really bottom-up community and a strong power to do things and to make things together. So that was a very innovative, as the design city was really seems to come from the people who are creating the design ecosystem. So that was the energy of the people that we felt through in Berlin. People that get together, that decide to do meetup, that decide to do campaign to promote design. Mm-hmm. It goes as well to large organizations like the City Lab who use design as an innovation tool. Mm-hmm. So we saw many, many examples of, you know, people trying to solve things and making things better with design. And it was really the energy of the people that we felt more. I'll just say that, talk about it a bit earlier, but I was really impressed through the visit that we done at the City Lab, that they're working in technology and trying technology work for the people. They have really integrated the design methodology into the core processes, and they do the full cycle of the design process, where you analyze, develop, test, evaluate, repeat, and through the evaluation process, they try to outreach, to say, to explain how they do it and why they do it. And I thought it was a really rounded example of the Berlin design scene.
By now, a clear picture of Berlin is beginning to emerge. Our guests consistently describe a city with an extraordinary diversity of creative initiatives, many of them driven from the bottom up by citizens, designers, and local communities. Stijn Debalieu from Design Regio Kortrijk in Belgium is no exception. As a first-time visitor, he is particularly impressed by how these independent initiatives are connected and supported while keeping their own identity.
It was my first time in Berlin. Could you imagine? I've seen graphic design studios, media arts design initiatives, queer democracy design initiatives. So the diversity was really cool to experience and to see that so many people are engaging. Also, many, they have their profession during the day and then they do it on a voluntary basis next to their work. And it's nice then to see that the Office of Berlin Design, that they're not curating, but they are really uniting. And that's really nice to see the connection then it becomes real.
Berlin's creative scene has left a strong impression on all of our guests. For Kiana Wenzel from Detroit, however, the visit also raises memories of her own city. At first glance, Berlin and Detroit seem worlds apart, yet their histories reveal striking parallels, especially when it comes to the ways cities can divide people and how they can begin to reconnect them.
I did see some parallels with the city, one being kind of our tumultuous history, particularly a couple of things, of course, the Berlin Wall. A lot of people talk about 8 Mile in Detroit. I don't know if you guys seen the movie 8 Mile.
The name became known around the world through the 2002 film starring Eminem. The title 8 Mile refers to the historic boundary between the city of Detroit and its northern suburbs and, for decades, symbolized the racial and economic segregation that shaped the metropolitan region. Unlike the Berlin Wall, it was never a physical barrier. It represented an invisible line that divided communities and opportunities.
So we have people coming to Detroit like, I want to see 8 Mile. I want to see 8 Mile. Well, 8 Miles, there's really nothing there. It's just like a median in the street, but it was this invisible border for a long time where urban planners by design separated people in the city of Detroit. And even though we didn't have a wall fall, we are now seeing a lot of that line blurred between the city and the suburb in Detroit, which is a good thing, which is helping our progress, and the same for your city.
Years as a UNESCO City of Design is an opportunity to also look ahead. Throughout this podcast, our guests have shared their impressions of Berlin's creative energy, its openness, and its unique approach to design. We asked them one final question. What should Berlin hold on to, and where should it go next?
I would recommend Berlin keeps on being Berlin. You're such a fascinating hub of big stories and small stories of institutional progress and kind of grassroots bubbling conversations. Just please keep being the fascinating, beautiful, glorious city that you are.
I would recommend to Berlin, its design scene, to keep on working as it's working now, especially with this bottom-up creation or these organic initiatives that emerge. If there is then this UNESCO design office from the city of Berlin that can unite and can support them, I think this is a really nice model. And on the other hand, what I would also wish to Berlin is that they set up a lot of projects with other design cities, so we can keep on sharing expertise and knowledge and network, and that we can create international markets for our designers to work. So.
It's a wide city, like expansive. You have breathing room. Mm-hmm. And so some cities that I go to is like very dense. Everyone's crowded in one area. I felt like I had room to like, it was a healthy level of density in Berlin. So I felt like it was a lot about, we don't want to just talk about the old Berlin, but it's a new day for this city, you know? And we want to write a new chapter. I thought that that was the most exciting, and I loved that museum district.
Kiana Wenzel's impression points to a central question for any city that wants to call itself a city of design. How do you preserve the energy that created your identity while continuing to evolve? So what is good about being a UNESCO City of Design? It's for sure not the title itself. Its real strength lies in what the designation can set in motion, creating networks, encouraging new ways of thinking, and giving people a shared framework to use creativity as a tool for change. But this also comes with a responsibility. A city of design cannot rely on past achievements or simply celebrate its creative reputation. It has to remain a place of experimentation, dialogue, and self-reflection. The challenge is to keep design alive, not as a label, but as a continuous practice that helps cities respond to the needs of their people. 20 years after becoming a UNESCO City of Design, Berlin's most important achievement may therefore not be what it has already built, but its ability to keep asking what comes next.
Design ist längst mehr als reine Ästhetik. Es ist die transformative Kraft für unsere Zukunft. Die Designkonferenz Form Future bringt DesignerInnen, Führungskräfte und VordenkerInnen zusammen. Erlebe ehrliche Keynotes, inspirierende Cases und packende Panels. Bring deine Fragen ein, tausch dich aus und gestalte den Wandel mit. Am 10. September im Flughafen Tempelhof Berlin. Tickets jetzt auf formfuture.berlin.